Friday, 29th of June, Lindock Library here. I'm sitting with Rhonda Feetz from Nyiriupta. Can you just maybe just give me a little bit of background about your family, where you're from, where you were born, when you were born, if you don't mind?
Born in the late 40s, that's a long time ago. In Angaston, my father grew up around Macolta, went to Truro School, and we, as my older sister and I, until I was about 18 months, we were down at Stonefield, I think they call it Dutton East, before my parents bought a farm north of Nyiriupta in a place called the Mopper. And my mother grew up at Neil's Flat around Udanda. Again, very much, all of those had very much backgrounds of subsistence farming. And both were very, very hard workers. So at the Mopper, it was an area of about 100 acres of mixed farming. Don't think the farm ever made a profit in all the years that I was there. And everybody had to participate in helping around the farm. So I suppose I could say that we ate what we grew, but being a mixed farm, there were a lot of other things happening on the farm. Okay. One of the things in our family, there were three girls born before the boys. So basically the girls were doing what boys would normally do in a family, and that's just the way it was for a lot of people. And once they got old enough, then they took over some of the bigger jobs. But I suppose some of the positives that came out of that is that we learnt to drive a tractor very young, and we learnt to drive a ute very young. We're helping around the farm from quite a young age, and I suppose I can vaguely remember we used to cut apricots during Christmas holidays, and I remember being fairly young and sort of helping just with cutting a few. We had vineyards, so we picked grapes, but we also needed to be part of the pruning tying on that happened in the middle of the year. And thinking about the cutting apricots during, always cutting apricots during our school holidays, I still am not a very good swimmer because all my friends were off learning how to swim and we couldn't do that. I was quite a bit older before I could do that. So I went to school at Nyiriupta Primary School and then later on at Nyiriupta High School. But as I mentioned before, there wasn't money for further education. So at 16 we were required to leave school and get a job. I would have liked to have been a teacher, but anyway, that's a longer story. I ended up doing similar things in later years, so sometimes you can do it in a roundabout way. Mm-hmm. I guess the other things we had around the farm were there were always some sheep, we had some pigs, we had fowls, and Mum used to, as an added little extra, there were usually about 100 fowls laying eggs, and she'd sell the eggs, and that she was able to buy us shoes to go to school in because there wasn't a lot of other income coming in. When I talk about eating what we grew, Mum always had a large vegetable garden. We had a smallish orchard. Nothing ever got wasted. About once a fortnight, Dad would kill a sheep, and that wouldn't have been a lamb, that would have been hogget. And so I think we probably grew up on hogget. I don't think I even saw a piece of steak till I was in teen years. And we as children, it was usually done in the evening because they had to hang the meat overnight for the meat to set a little bit, and then the next day you'd see Mum and Dad sort of sawing it all up and into portions that they could use. But as children, there was always one of us had to go down with the dish. And by that time, Dad would have skinned the sheep and had it hanging up. And as I said, they didn't waste anything, so all the things like the brains were collected. I didn't like that bit. The liver, the kidneys. And Mum was very good at sort of disguising that, doing things with the liver and the kidneys and things like that we really didn't want to eat, but I guess it was just something we had to do. And then I can't remember whether it was once a year or once of 2 years, and sometimes one of our other relations helped us, but we'd kill a pig. And those are fairly vivid memories because I guess I was a bit older by the time I was helping, probably still at primary school. And it was a big pig, lot of meat and small goods you get out of a pig. So we did all our own smoking, pickling, did our own metwurst, sausages. I still have memories of being down by the trough cleaning runners that you use for your sausages. And then often we had to help with the mincing as well. What other parts did we use? We used to have beautiful bacon and smoked ham, and the little cement smoke box or smoke room that was used was also used for sulfuring the apricots because we used to dry apricots, so it had a dual purpose in summer and probably in autumn as well. Some of the other parts of the pig, of course, you'd have your pickled, they'd pickle some of the meat, we'd use some of the meat fresh. There's still some parts of the pig I don't eat, and one of them is crackling, because the first thing you had to do when we were quite young, when they killed the pig, it was done very quickly, but the pigs would make a lot of noise, so we'd hide up in the house with our fingers and our ears. But Mum would have been boiling up the copper with hot water, and when that was ready, we had to take the hot water down in buckets and help scrape all the hairs off the skin of the pig. A lot of people like crackling, I shouldn't be telling them this. And the other thing I don't eat easily, we had the black pudding and the white pudding, but Mum would, I have visions of the head in a big pot, and she used to make brawn out of that, so I don't eat brawn either because I still have the mental images. The white pudding, which is like leberwurst, so that would have had... they didn't use much of the offal of the pigs, but they would have used the liver and the leberwurst. We called it wurst. And the black pudding, after you'd done the metwurst and the sausages, there weren't that many sort of runners left, so Mum would pack it in a baking dish. And every morning during winter, we had that for breakfast until it was all gone. So I don't eat black pudding these days either. And then I had a mental image. We had cows. We all had to learn to hand milk when we were younger, but later we got a milking machine. And at some times we used to be separating. Most of the time the milk, there was a truck came around and collected the fresh milk. But sometimes when milk prices weren't good, we'd separate the milk and the cream would be sold, and that's why we had pigs. They would get the skim milk. Mm-hmm. But most of the time in latter years, I think they were mainly just selling milk. I don't remember using the separator much in later years. And Mum, occasionally they would rear their own chickens, so often you were... I was looking at one of those the other day, one of those little cutters that you've got and used to cut up green feed for the chickens. Mm-hmm. You sometimes still see them out in some of the, probably one in the Tanunda Museum, I imagine. And I guess mainly we really didn't have a lot of time. If we went to school and we came home in primary school, you usually didn't have homework. But we always had our chores, and in the morning, actually, I guess my mother was quite good. She was the one that got up and milked the cows and did the things that had to be done in the morning, because we had to catch a bus, or my father set up a bus run in the very, very early years, probably middle 50s, but we always had to catch a bus right through to the end of the time we left high school. But
did that not allow enough time for you to do these chores? Is that what you're saying, in the mornings?
Oh, in the mornings, as I say, I think she was very kind to us in that way, is it was always hard to get out of bed in the morning anyway. But depending which way, there was quite a long bus run, and if my father was running it in early years, we got on the bus first. Well, that meant you had to be up fairly early while they did the rest of it. Later years, sometimes we were lucky, the bus started right at the other end, out Light Pass way, and came down through Ebenezer and then back into Newry that way, so we didn't have to be quite as early on the bus. But yes, a lot of, I remember we didn't appreciate it. I remember we had to work hard at quite a few times of the year. But I look back on it now and I realise that we were learning a lot of life skills in the process. And if I really had to do that sort of thing now, I could still do it, but I'm very thankful that we have enough, what was it I said the other day, enough disposable income now that, for a start, I don't need to eat our pets and I could go out and buy some other sort of food, because that was the one thing we hated, was if one of the mother sheep had had twins and she couldn't look after them both, we would bottle feed a lamb and we'd give them a name, which isn't a good idea, but, Sammy or Suki or something like that. And eventually, of course, it got old enough that it had to be used for meat. And we'd say, well, we're not eating meat for the next week or fortnight. And Dad got a bit canny after a few years and he'd say, oh, it's about time. We have to use Sammy or Suki. And we'd say, we're not going to eat any meat for the next week. He said, well, I'm sorry, but you've been eating it all week. He wasn't very popular then, but it was just life, I guess. The only way we survived. And we did have time off on Sundays because you usually went to church in the morning and then you didn't do very much. You had time to. We used to all like reading. I used to like climbing trees. I used to go out. We still had a bit of natural bush land around and I'd often go out walking. Later years we had several bicycles, so I'd often on a Sunday afternoon just get on the bike and go out. Have a bit of a look around and get away for a little while. And I guess I should say I was the second of five children. So when the younger ones were very young, I guess the older ones were doing most of that work, but later on it got distributed a little bit more. But I suppose one of the things we did enjoy was we could never be part of a team at sports, because there was always things to be done on weekends, and your parents couldn't run you into practice during the week, and again on a Saturday they couldn't run you in, depending where you the team would have been playing. But eventually in high school, I was pretty hopeless at sport anyway, but eventually in high school I found out I could play hockey, but I could never be part of a team because for that reason. And sometimes I used to ride my bike into school and things like that, because it was downhill all the way into school, but it was uphill all the way on the way home. And I guess playing sport would have been a bit the same. If it was local, fine, but when they went further afield, so. But one of the things we did as teenagers, we did do, we learnt a bit of, we were talking about dancing a bit earlier, a bit of dancing at high school, had some lessons. They used to have youth socials, and that was something we really enjoyed going to. And it increased our circle of people we knew. I liked school. I used to get on okay at school, but it was, for me, it was a bit of socialisation, which we didn't get a lot of. And at school, you didn't have to do all that work outside. So I thought it was an interesting place to be. I enjoyed that learning anyway.
How often were the youth socials?
I think they might have run about once a month. It became part of the whole, the church groups. No, I don't think they were that often. No, I think they would have been less than that, perhaps once every 3 months. That's something I can't actually remember, how often. We occasionally went to a film because the Newark Institute used to run a film every now and then, so I still remember that. Great excitement when the drive-in arrived. We were a little bit older, and once we had our licence, or somebody, like my older sister, had a licence, we used to go off there occasionally. I suppose Mum and Dad took us in the early years when it first started.
And when was that?
I reckon that was in the 60s. I think I was probably already at high school. I reckon it's early 60s. And I noticed the other day it's no longer there. Well, the whole area is cleared now. But it's also interesting, I guess, you know, what we were saying earlier is that there wasn't the money to go out and have other people entertain you or to go to entertainment. So you learnt to keep yourself busy, entertain yourselves. And the things like going to a film, well, that required money, but I was a teenager before I ever saw a film in the city. And I still think it's a bit special, you know, to get, you know, make a special effort to go there and see a film. And the ones I would have remembered, you know, they had a few films like The Ten Commandments and a few things like that that we went to because Mum and Dad thought they'd be okay. So I guess that's it. We didn't. The socialisation would have mainly been if you got together with relatives. Dad's side of the family, Mum's side of the family were very good at celebrating milestone birthdays. So you'd get together and one family in particular, we were related twice over, as two sisters married two brothers. So we saw a lot of them, but we had a lot of cousins and most of them weren't too far afield. I guess the Riverland would have been the furthest. So that was, I suppose, a greater part of our socialisation over the years, and the youth socials put you in contact with people more of our age.
How often would you travel, say, down to Semaphore, to the beach? Or was it something that was a big deal back when you were a kid?
We never went to the Adelaide beaches, but the big special for us was Christmas holidays. We'd finished cutting apricots. We'd always go to Port Parham. That was our big day out. And come back sunburnt and windburnt and all the rest. And Dad always wanted to go crabbing. And if you know Port Parham, the water goes out about, you know, a kilometre or something, and you'd see him set off, you know, with his little tub and whatever. Don't know whether he ever caught a crab, but I think he enjoyed just getting away from the farm and getting away from the family. It was just something that became part of what the Christmas holidays were. You cut the apricots, and often we were cutting like under a hot tin reef when it was at what would have been now 42 degrees or something like that. And you certainly didn't have air conditioning and things like that. But I guess as the boys grew up, they had it a bit tougher because they were out picking apricots and we had white sand and picking apricots on. And when it gets over about, you know, 33 or 34, white sand gets quite hot. So we girls were mainly inside doing the cutting of it. And then the apricots had to go on the trays and be sulphured, and then they went out in the sun. And you didn't stack the trays unless you thought there was a storm coming, but often, quite often in summer, you get storms that come in suddenly. And often we were pulled out of bed about midnight stacking trays because, you know, it started raining, or it was very windy and dusty, which wasn't good either. So a few little things like that.
And who did you supply your apricots to?
They would have gone to Angus Park mainly. It was one of those things, and I suppose it was the same with the grapes went to various wineries, like you had your contracts with various wineries as you do now. But with the apricots, if you had a really, really, really good year and they thought they'd do very well out of the apricots, either the price would be down because everybody had lots of apricots, or you'd get a hailstorm. Many times we got a hailstorm about November and it'd mark all the fruit, so then it would be downgraded to second grade, so you didn't get good prices on that. And I guess the same with the grapes. I've lived through about three gluts in the wine industry where people put in lots, well, often asked to put in different varieties and lots and lots and lots and lots, and then the wineries couldn't deal with all the grapes, and so they cut those contracts, and that was very, very hard for some of the smaller subsistence farmers because they really relied on that income. And I suppose the other thing I remember about grape picking, well, I didn't mind grape picking because we often had people in to help, so we had that bit of socialisation, but I hate, I'm thankful every winter time I don't need to do any pruning or tying on because going out when it's really cold and wet and things, and it just had to be done. But yeah, the grapes, I think, I remember the older varieties, and there's quite, and we still had vines that weren't trellised. Most of them weren't trellis, so that's quite hard picking down very low. But I think I realised I quite enjoyed it because I liked being outside. It was usually sunny. Got used to being quite hot sometimes, but yeah, it wasn't so bad. And I didn't have to think about the prices and what they were getting for it at the end. So.
Do you remember Ross and Roma Koch?
I do the name, yeah.
Yeah, I, as a kid, picked grapes for them once, and they had these old vineyards going up the Roland Flat Hill on the right near the train line, and they were really old vines, but they were just down here in the dirt.
Yeah, exactly. That's hard work.
Yeah, and on a hot day, like you'd be on your knees, they're that low.
That's right.
And you'd burn, take the skin off you.
Mm. Oh, it does eventually, that's right. And yeah. Especially as you're younger. I was thinking too that I did do a little bit of grape picking in later years to help out with some people, but and these days I think they have a hot weather policy anyway, but when it's trellised and you've got the vines up around here, it's not so bad out there in the vineyard because you've got a little bit, you've got your head down, you've got a bit more shelter, but those early days were pretty tough. Mm. That's right. We did also have some crops, sort of wheat, barley, type crops, so when they were harvested we had to help with, and this is again where the girls were older, they were helping with these things until the boys were ready, and they were sheaves of hay. It was before the balers, baled hay came in, because you needed big expensive equipment for that, so we would have helped with bringing sheaves of hay in. We'd help Dad with that, and we had an old ute. And that's where I learnt to drive. My father, he was sick of driving, stopping and picking things up, so he asked my sister whether she'd come out and drive the ute. And she said, oh, I'm not going to do that. And I said, I'll come. I think I was about 10 or 11 or something. And, of course, you know what you like when you start driving, sort of jerking all over the place. Well, soon after that, my older sister was out there too. She wasn't going to let me be the first one to do it.
What sort of ute did you have?
I think it was an old Bedford. I think it was, yeah. And it would have still been, there would have been three gears on the steering wheel type thing, yeah.
Column shift.
Yeah. So we learnt with a manual car. And later it wasn't that hard when you got into an ordinary car. And I used to like being on the tractor. We always wanted to be on the tractor, so with grape picking, just moving the tractor around or taking it out or bringing it in. I did persuade Dad one year that I could do some cultivating, and he said, well, you make sure it's all straight, because other people then used to look at that everything was done properly. I decided that wasn't quite so interesting, but I thought I'd try it anyway. But
How did it go?
Oh, I was very careful. I had it in low gear all the way. So, but yeah, it was just some of the things that you got sick of the routine all the time. So to try something different was really good. And the thing I do remember about the sheaves of hay when we had to help put them on the ute, or by that time we had a tractor and a trailer, when we were unloading them, you had to put them in stooks, but when we were quite young, we'd make little cubby houses out of them and sort of play around a bit with them. But I realised later years it was a wonderful haven for snakes, but eventually Dad would always say we had to dismantle them because the hay had to dry out properly. Mm-hmm. And these days, knowing about spontaneous combustion and all that, I guess we were lucky nothing like that happened.
Did you ever have any experiences with snakes as a kid?
I've probably had more in recent years than I did then. Occasionally, and one of the things was, and my brother was probably about 10 and he was helping unload hay from a trailer, and he came across a snake on the trailer, and he came off, he did one big jump, he came off that trailer really, really quickly. I guess the main one I remember, there was a snake inside the house, and we don't know how it got in. Being an older stone home, there were probably, you know, little, I think there was one place where Dad had to do up cracks and things like that in later years, so it probably came in through a crack. And it was in one of the bedrooms, and I'm thinking if my sister was 3, I was probably only 5 or 6, so I remember that quite well. And she was supposed to be going up for her afternoon sleep, and she didn't want to go, and Mum was sort of chasing her up, and she ran into the bedroom, and there's this sort of snake. So it gave everybody an awful shock at that stage. We had, like, dogs and always had cats. Cats would hang around, and they kept the mice down, and they'd hang around at milking time. And oh, I suppose the thing about the cows is that usually they turned up for milking because they were ready to be milked, so they'd come from wherever they were, but occasionally if they'd been put in another paddock or something, we had to go out and get them. And I always think, when they brought in daylight saving, that was really, really tough because those cows didn't know they were supposed to come in an hour early. So people would have been out getting their cows all the time. It didn't happen when I was still living at home, but in later years I know people on the land were saying it made a big difference to things they were doing, because if you were taking your loads in, things would take a while to dry out, but if you were taking some grain into a silo or something like that, they'd still open at the same time, or open at sort of 9 o'clock, which is really 8 o'clock sort of thing. So it did make a difference to people on the farms. But I don't remember. Yeah.
But daylight saving, I'm not sure when that was introduced.
No, I'm trying to remember now. They certainly had it during the war years, so my parents would have been aware of it. But I think it was reintroduced either late 60s or early 70s, because it might have been early 70s, because our son started primary school in 1978, and he was one of those children that didn't go to sleep early at night. And to get him up again in the morning, he'd be so tired eventually, I usually had to give him a day off just to catch up. Yeah. So I think maybe it was even middle 70s when they brought it back. Yes.
Can I, do you have more?
No, I think I've covered pretty well everything. There was just a little comment about feeding the fowls, but that was just part of our chores. There were enough of us, we all had different chores. Remember, milking cows by hand was quite difficult, and I started having a bit of trouble with my hands, and my mum thought, I made a swap, and my mum thought I was just making excuses, but later years I started getting a bit of arthritis, so I guess it was just one of those things that didn't suit me that well.
Can you share any stories that have been passed down through your parents and when they were growing up?
I guess thinking about my father, he was the eldest of 5, and his mother died when he was 10. And the youngest child, the one girl, was 6 weeks old, so mother died of TB. So they had a pretty rough upbringing, I guess. A father who wasn't really capable of looking after children. I think they're bachelor uncle might have been an alcoholic, but he taught them a lot of things that Dad used in later life about cooking and things like that. I remember Dad said they learnt to swim by taking a bathtub down to the old dam and throwing it in, and the bathtub had a few holes in it, so they had to learn to swim to get back again. I don't know if that's correct or not, but that's what he used to talk about. Both my mum and dad, I remember mum saying that she liked school, and she would have liked to have been a maths teacher. And she did very well in her, they used to call it the progress certificate, the PC certificate in year seven. And she did very well, and she actually got a scholarship to go to high school, but she was told she couldn't go. She had to go home and work on the farm. And that happened with a lot of the people in those areas further out. And Dad would have been similar. He had a spot on the lung, and he never ever was accepted for the army, but he was taken out of school to work at home. Yeah, they were both I think they were quite intelligent people. If in different circumstances, they would have done different things with their lives. And Mum was able to help my sister with her maths homework at high school, and yet she'd never ever done it, so she had that ability. But Dad actually went back as a mature age student. Now, that would have been most unusual, I think, in about the 1930s, late 30s, early 40s. And he went back to matriculate. But then because he had these troubles with his lungs, he was told he had to go and work on a farm, or had to be outside. He would have made a really good mechanic or something. But again, it just happened with people. Like us leaving school, having to leave school, but there were at least a lot of jobs around at that time. Mm-hmm. And you had to make up your mind what you wanted to do. And I knew what I didn't want to do, and I didn't want to work in an office. So I had to convince my parents that I wanted to do the stream of maths and science and things like that, because that's what I like doing. I didn't want to do typing and whatever. And yes, I quite enjoyed that part of it. But my brothers, later on, they did a bit of further education. I ended up doing a certificate at TAFE when I was about 50-something. So it took me a long time for the further education. And that actually came about through my volunteering. So,
okay,
yeah. Getting the skills along the way, and then these days you're able to go along and...
Was that at Newry?
Newry TAFE, that's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a certificate in assessment workplace training, which if I'd been able to do it 10 years earlier, I probably could have actually earned some money out of it, but it was a bit later in my working life when I did it. But it was good, because these days they can sort of tick off the skills you have and then say yes. And for, I think I would have gone for 6 months or a year, I don't know, once a week. I'd had that feeling for many, many years, and coming across people I'd gone to school with and whatever, and their parents, usually around the valley, if they went to further education, they usually went to teaching, because we didn't know all those other things you could do. Mm-hmm. And you always felt a bit like a second-class citizen if you hadn't had a university, gone to university. And it's really only been in the last 10 or so years. In later years, I did a bit of paid work at a small primary school on the support staff. So I was working with children, things mm-hmm. like that, which was really good. But they suddenly started realising, as that curriculum was changing to children doing more real-life things rather than just book learning, they started realising I had these life skills, you know, what you call life skills, your things like your cooking and your sewing and your preserving and all those sorts mm-hmm. of things, which I did a certain amount of after we first married and moved to Cockatoo Valley. So it's changed a little bit, where now the going straight from school into university isn't as important, because there are other pathways to getting that extra learning now. And it's not, the book learning's not the be-all and the end-all.
Mm. Mm.
There are other things that are important as well, so... Mm.
Do you think, and I asked Trevor this question before, as growing up in the Barossa Valley, do you feel that there was a real sense of community spirit amongst the valley?
I guess because we were out of the town a bit, we weren't very involved with the happenings in Newry at the time. And I suppose I should also point out, they talk about the Barossa Valley now as an entity. When I was growing up, you had Angaston, Tanunda, Newry, and they were all separate groups. They had their separate football teams and netball teams and schools and whatever. And a lot of us came together at high school. I guess I was aware as I was getting older, as a teenager, that if you belong to a local church or parish or whatever, they were always doing things for the community. In later years, I've realised, especially in country areas, they look after their own very well. If people are in trouble, whatever. But as I said, I guess I wasn't aware of that so much when I was younger, because we were always sort of busy on the farm doing things there and didn't really integrate into a lot of things other than going off to church on the Sundays and being involved with a youth group. And I perhaps wasn't so aware of how important that was either.
Mm-hmm. This next question might be totally down the same line, but maybe not. Was there any major events regionally within the Barossa Valley that you felt were really important moments in the Barossa's history?
Well, I guess one that I now remember, talking to Trevor before, reminded me the one of the big events, and it was important to us as teenagers, was the Vintage Festival. That was a really special time. And it did change in the 70s, but in the 60s it was still the great men of the wine industry got together at the beginning of the year, looked at the season and said, oh, well, our season will be finished such and such a time, so let's have that weekend. And the Vintage Festival was more like a country show. And all the people who'd been picking their grapes and out on the farms, and they'd go in and they'd have a day out because the harvest was finished and it was a fun day. And later in the 70s it changed to be more for tourists and people coming into the valley, and it did totally change the sort of concept that was set up in the first place. And now, of course, it's a set time after, straight after Easter, or that weekend straight after Easter. So I remember the changes, and I wasn't always that happy with all the changes, but then again, they had a different focus, I guess,
mm-hmm.
to what they were in earlier years. I guess the show days, we had chances occasionally to go off to the shows. What other events historically? I suppose just thinking about sort of weather patterns and how it affected people on farms. I do remember, I was probably about mid-primary school, when there was a drought and there was water shortage, and Dad and Mum used to have a plot of lucerne that they used to put a sprinkler on. That was extra feed for the cows, because we were selling the milk and that was part of our income. And to this day, I still cannot manage to persuade myself it's a good idea to put a lot of water on a lawn, probably because of this. In the town, people were still allowed to water their gardens and water their lawns, but Dad and Mum were not allowed to put a sprinkler on the lucerne patch. And that caused quite a lot of angst at the time, as you can well imagine. So I guess historically, the droughts, people in the town, people on the land got treated a bit differently. So, yeah.
Wow, I haven't heard that. That's quite shocking, really.
Well, if I think about it now, it was very unfair, and somebody in an office somewhere was making a decision that if we want all these people to be able to have their lawns, need to allow them to still water them, but they weren't looking at that further thing, the people who are providing the food and whatever and trying to live off their farms needed the water as well. And we were on the end of a pipeline anyway, and often it was just a dribble. and so we had dams for the cows and things like that, I suppose. Oh, and the one thing we enjoyed doing was yabbing. That was a very special thing, going down and catching yabbies.
Any old recipes for yabbies?
I suppose we didn't do much with them except I think we only put them in boiling salted water. But Peter's father used to put in a little bit of, what did he put in? A bit of dill and a bit of, what would have it been? Dill and thyme, maybe. Would have salt in it. I'll have to ask Peter, he might remember that one. But I've found out since that with your shellfish, you can put things like your onion and lemon, all sorts of things in the water, and it's absorbed. So that's obviously the dill. I think it was dill and mint. That's probably what he would have had in the garden. So, but no, we didn't do anything really fancy with it. They were just lovely. Yeah. Well, I suppose, yeah, just to backtrack a bit, I know people who have come into the valley later have said it's a very closed community, but looking at the history of the people who came out, and certainly my forebears were Wendish, which was more Polish than German, but they had to integrate, and they became a very contained community, and that's the way they survived, and a lot of them were actually illiterate when they came out, so they relied on the head of the church to be the person who guided them through all the things they needed to do. And I suppose the fact that the thing that I really commend a lot of people, so many people, and this is looking at the people in the towns, often on the farms, they didn't have the time to be involved, but all the sporting facilities, things like the Tanunda pool is no longer there, Newry swimming pool, it was all built by volunteers, so people had that vision. All the soldiers' memorial halls, where the locals raised all the funds for that and built those halls in memory of the people whom they'd lost. And I guess the people even on the farms, if they belonged to a church, and that they always gave of their time, the produce. We not being very well off, people were willing to share things like their young ones had grown out of clothes and all that, so they were caring for others in that way. But yes, I guess as a whole, even though a lot of people say, oh, I'm so glad now I left, because they sort of looked at some of that very self-contained, and people who hadn't travelled far still had the old way of thinking about things, and people who've, and you would probably notice it coming back. But I still think those people, those hardworking people, the salt of the earth, I still have a lot of regard for those people. My parents, grandparents and people like them who worked so hard in very, very, very tough conditions. And we're talking about the valley now, but of course it was further afield in country areas. And even though they didn't have a lot of money, they regarded as education as being really important, and they would support their schools, and in the cases where they've built some of the other schools in recent times, those people always put their money in, even if they only had their little fivepence that they could. They always put money into things like that. And I suppose all those people in the towns, building of the swimming pools and the sports centres and all the rest of it, they all did the same, and everybody worked together. So I think that's probably that sense of community was very strong, and you can see a lot of that, some of the giving of things to people you don't see, but you now see the monuments to that now that are left behind. And of course some people don't think it's important. We have a pool in Tanunda anymore, so it's all being pulled up and whatever. And I suppose that's the pity of it. Unless you've grown up in that area, you don't value it quite as much, maybe.
Well, Rhonda, we'll leave it there then. Yeah, thank you so much.
That's okay. Oh, it's been a very easy thing to do.